Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Is the hadith that says, "Inna hazal ilma dinukum." Ilm is your religion. Ilm will show you what is halal, what is haram, what is right, what is wrong. And one who doesn't have ilm, then how is he going to make out what is halal and what is haram? He's covered in total darkness because he doesn't have ilm. It is possible that he may intend right, but he doesn't have ilm. So his duty is to go and inquire, to go and find out. Sahaba Ikram were once in jihad. So one person got injured, a head injury. And by the morning he needed a first bath. He's got a head injury and he requires a head, he needs a first bath. And it may have been one of those cold winter mornings. So he went and explained to some sahaba, "See, I've got a head injury and I require a first bath. What am I to do?" So they explained, "No, you will have to have a first bath." So sahaba ikram were of that caliber that everything was secondary to deen. Deen was the primary concern. Come what may, then we have to disconform to the deeni requirements and principles. So he went and had a bath in the cold winter's morning with a severe head injury. So he couldn't sustain that wound and he passed away. So the sahaba ikram also had it amongst them that whatever happened, whatever transpired, they would give a full report to the Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Okay, this is what has happened. We were out in jihad. This person had a head injury. He required a farz bath in the morning. And he inquired. So this is what was told to him. And then he passed away. So Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam was upset. And he said, "Qataltumuhu qatalakumullah. You people have killed this man here. May Allah Ta'ala destroy you as well." Shifa'ul iyyi as-su'al. The person that is not well versed, then his work, in other words, the solution to his work, shifa, solution to his work is to ask. He doesn't know. Right? He doesn't know what is right from wrong, what is farz from nafal. But his duty is to find out, which he did. He didn't spare any effort in finding out the obligations and duties. So he did whatever he needed to do. But it was your problem. He found out whatever he needed to find out, and then you all showed him. But you had misled him by showing him a wrong masla. As a result, he passed away. Right. Now, apparently in this age, this has become a sickness of the day. The radios, on the televisions, then everybody is writing magazines and papers and articles. And in all this, people are using their own minds. They're using their own brains. And it's guesswork, it's speculation. Right? All is needed to fascinate the crowd and the readership. The readership must be happy with you. But you're using your own brain, using your own mind. When you're using your own mind, then there could be a mistake in your understanding, in your reasoning. One person's reasoning is different to the next person, and the next person's reasoning is different to the third person. So there must be some standard, right? The standard would be the Hadith and the Quran, and then Ijma, right? So the ulama of the past and present have worked on this. They've worked on Hadith, worked on Quran, and they've worked on Ijma as well. When they worked on all these things here, then they prepared books after that. With this in mind, that the coming generations, there will be a need. They want to know solutions to their problems. So when they will want to know solutions to their problems, let us prepare all these books. We'll prepare everything. We'll document everything. So in the event they have got a problem, the books are ready, they will refer to the book and they will carry on. So they were not cutting grass, and they were not just taking a chance. Their reasoning was so profound that you can't compare your reasoning to their reasoning. Just for our understanding, to show you what was the level of the reasoning, right? It's one or two examples that come to mind. Say, for example, two people are traveling, right? And there is no water. When there is no water, and both require the water, one requires the water for his wuzu, the other requires water because he needs ghusl. So one person requires to take a ghusl, one person requires to take wuzu in the morning, but there is no water available. When there is no water available, then what should they do? All right, they'll make tayammum. That everybody knows. More or less, Muslims will know that in the non-availability of water, you make wuzu, right? Or you make tayammum, right? Now the question is, then who has the right or who has the preference to lead the namaz? The one that took wuzu, or the one that made tayammum for wuzu, or the one that made tayammum for ghusl? Both made tayammum. One person made tayammum for wuzu, and the other made tayammum for ghusl. Now it's a question that who will be preferred to make the imamat, to lead the prayer? Will you be guessing, or will you refer it to someone? If you want to guess it, then our minds will tell. What will our minds say? The one that made tayammum for wuzu, he is supposed to be preferred for imamat. Now compare your answer against the answer of the fuqaha that have documented all their proofs, all their workings and all that. They say no, that this person who has made tayammum for ghusl, he is preferred to make the imamat rather than the person that made tayammum for wuzu. Now, what's the reasoning? The reasoning goes like this, that the one that's making tayammum, right, for example, for wuzu, so the wuzu became a substitute for, the tayammum became a substitute for his wuzu, right? The tayammum became a substitute for his wuzu. And the one that took tayammum for ghusl, then ghusl has got wuzu as well, right? So that became a substitute for wuzu and ghusl. And taharatul ghusl ashad. And ghusl is obviously superior than wuzu, because you're washing your entire body down. The ghusl is superior to wuzu. Why it's superior to wuzu? Because you're washing your entire body down. So his taharat is superior to the taharat of the person that just took tayammum for wuzu. So therefore, he'll be preferred to imamat. Now see, they were not cutting grass. And that is why it is not for us to take a chance. Just, you know, it comes to my mind, I must do this. I think I must do this. My opinion, I feel like this. That is why radio stations, I'm not talking of the good they've done. But I think when I look at what is going on, the wrong they have brought is greater than the good. It's created a lot of confusion in people's minds. Sometimes you'll hear bayan that you mustn't be casual to women, right? And the Quran Sharif says, فَلَا تَخْضَعْنَ بِالْقَوْلِ. When women are speaking, they mustn't speak in soft tones. Right. Now, when you are an avid listener to these programs, then you'll see that they are talking quite casually over the radio. They're talking to men, but they're talking quite casually, freely, casually. And then they're talking in soft and alluring tones. Soft and alluring tones. And yet the Quran Sharif is saying, فَلَا تَخْضَعْنَ بِالْقَوْلِ, that don't speak in soft and alluring tones. In fact, the Quran Sharif went even one step ahead. Quran Sharif says, وَلَا يَدْرِبْنَ بِأَرْجُلِهِنَّ لِيُخْفِينَ what? لِيُعْلَمَ مَا يُخْفِينَ مِنْ زِينَتِهِنَّ. وَلَا يَدْرِبْنَ بِأَرْجُلِهِنَّ لِيُعْلَمَ مَا يُخْفِينَ مِنْ زِينَتِهِنَّ. They mustn't even strike their feet to turn people's attention to their concealed beauty. They mustn't even strike their feet, that they turn people's attention to their concealed beauty. Right. Now, what do you mean by to not attack attention of their towards their hidden beauty? In the old days, or in fact even now, in the Eastern countries, right? Some Eastern countries, like we have bangles and bracelets for the hands, then they have some type of an anklet for the feet. Now, if they're going to strike the feet, those anklets are going to be ringing, right? And the anklets are concealed. Aren't they concealed? They're concealed, right? But now they're striking their feet, and when they're striking their feet, it's going to make a ringing sound. Right? When it's going to make a ringing sound, then is it not going to be attracting to men? It's going to be attracting. It's going to draw the attention of men towards this. So one is their voices. They have to guard their voices. But even the ringing sound of their jewelry, they are not supposed to be striking their feet in a way to draw attention towards that as well. So this ringing sound of the jewelry, this is even lighter than their own voices. Their own voices are more attractive than this. When their own voices are more attracted to this, then you can imagine how serious it is just to casually engage in a discussion with a woman, right? Because naturally, she's got some softness, she's got some attraction in her voice. And we are talking to them casually, right? Now, the ulama have explained from this, right? From the single verse in Fatawa al-Nawazil, there were several masail that they have explained. So they say that if there isn't a genuine need, then a man is not supposed to be teaching a girl Quran Sharif as well. It's a young girl of age now, 12, 13, 14. Then a man, a qari sahib or whatever, is not supposed to be teaching a young girl even the Quran Sharif. Where there's a genuine need and constraints, a different thing. But under normal circumstances, that she's not supposed to be teaching Quran, he's not supposed to be teaching Quran Sharif to a girl. The reason is obvious. Her voice is luring, is attractive. And then what happens? Your mind begins to work. You begin to make qiyas. You begin to reason, analyze. If the voice is so attractive, then what would be the person like? Yeah, from one thing, it leads to the other. The voice is attractive, so I want to see like how the person sees, right? So if by chance you saw her face, then your mind is saying, but I'd like to see how she feels, you know. You got the voice, so the voice is leading you to the features, and the features is leading you to the feelings. And then all the hell breaks loose, isn't it? So the Quran is stopping us from the very beginning. Okay, you don't strike your feet to draw attention to the hidden beauty. ولا يضربن بأرجلهن ليعلم ما يخفين من زينتهن. See. So, therefore, these people have taken the pains to document all this. Now, on this side, you're seeing the radio. They're not concerned about it. They made like a business. And whatever runs, whatever it takes for the business to run, they are prepared to do it. They need to make business. But they need to take business, then they need to see now what will sell. If this type of information sells, then they have to sell this type of information. The primary concern is not deen. Primary concern is a business. We need to market our business. In order to market our business, then we need to make these compromises. If we don't make this compromise, then our product is not going to sell. So our product is going to sell when we make this type of a compromise. So they're not worried about deen. Like how you have a hostess on a plane, right? Or you have a woman, right? Standing in a counter. Or a woman's photograph taken on some product, right? Whether it's Coke or something, she's drinking Coke, right? Now, what was the need for having the picture of a woman on a product? Just to enhance the product, isn't it? Otherwise, there is no connection between the woman and the product itself. Is there a connection? Is there a link between the woman and the product that you're selling? But just to enhance that product in the eyes of the purchaser, you have to draw it like that. So that will make better marketing. It will promote your product. See? Some time back, one person came here, just showing what happens to people's mind. See? We don't understand how is marketing take place. But the type of venom and the type of poison that settles into your heart. One person had come here, so he was explaining his own problem. He says, you know, I only watched sports and nothing else. I only watched sports. And then what happened was just me watching the sports, and it made me a liquor addict. I began to drink wine. I say, how you link it up? So he says, see, in those sports programs, whether it was soccer, cricket, whatever it was, in those sports programs, you have an interval. And in the interval, they have some advertisement. If, for example, Coca-Cola is sponsoring the whole match, right, then there will be an advertisement of Coca-Cola. And if it is Castle Lager or something that is sponsoring the whole match, then they will do the advertisements, right? Because they are sponsoring it, so they will advertise. Every now and then, one snippet will come up and they are advertising the product. So, you see, I used to watch these programs, and in between will come these advertisements. Advertisement to sell these beers, right? Whatever it was. But the advertisement is done in such a fascinating way. It's so eye-catching. It's a girl, the ambiance of the place, and the beer, and the glass, and how it's being poured, and how the man is passing it, or the woman is passing it to the man, you know, the looks, all that. So that really caught my mind. When it caught my mind, I thought to myself, this must be something great, you know. Let me just try it out. See the ambience, how that picture, how they capture the picture. And then they relay those pictures to all viewers. All this is marketing. They're not doing it just for show. They're doing it for marketing purposes, to sell the product. But they know the trick that girl can do. See? So that girl, that woman, is a marketing product. Her voice is a marketing product. Her looks is a marketing product. Everything of hers is a marketing product. We need to understand at this point that why it's right. When you talk of vice, in other words, Western people, right? Shame and modesty is not at all part of their culture. from before it was not their culture. There's a lengthy hadith of Huzaifa radiallahu anhu, where Umar radiallahu anhu had stopped the Muslims from getting married to the Kitabi woman. Then one of the reasons that he had given was that they don't have shame and modesty. Like Arab women, Indian women have shame and modesty. But they don't have it. It's not in the culture to be ashamed, to be modest. It's nothing for them. Right? So when there isn't a thing like, there isn't a vestige of shame in them. Right? Now, you socialize with them and you mix up with them freely, then you begin to think and reason like them. That, well, shame, modesty is not such a serious thing that how you make it to be. You know, we can dress up how we like. We can dress up with tights, body-revealing clothing. What's wrong with that? Our hearts are clear, our minds are clear. So what's wrong in us wearing this type of clothing? We can interact with men. We are just humans. They are humans, we are humans. So why must we shy away from them? So we need to interact with them. See? So all the vestige and all the barriers of shame is being smashed down. So Umar realized this and he said, put a stop to this. Now this person is saying, now I used to watch this thing here, and these advertisements used to come at intervals. And I looked at it a couple of times, a couple of good times, and it began to appeal to my mind. This thing looks so attractive, let me just try it out. So I tried it out and that thing had the better over me. Now I'm addicted, I can't leave this thing here. But where it started from, this is where it started from. So the program looks so innocent. It's so innocent program. Just looking, I'm just listening. And then what the type of venom it leaves in your heart. You don't want to talk about it to your family, to your wife or anybody else. But you know that you're getting affected. When this woman talks and you feel something, and your hair begins to stand up, you get aroused a little bit. You get some sensation you get. Now the sensation, Allah knows you're getting that sensation. And you can't hide these things away from Allah Ta'ala. Perhaps you can hide it from people, but from Allah Ta'ala, can you hide these things? You can't hide these things. You go to, you are boarding a plane, and then when she's serving you, the hostess serving you, you give her a broad smile and say, thank you, I'm very grateful for your service. Right? So if you are so grateful, you had so much of gratitude in you, do you make this type of expressions to your wife? So grateful to you, you know, I really appreciate the type of food that you have prepared. She's a woman, she did something. But all your gratitude is for a paid laborer. She's getting paid, she's not doing that for mahala, she's getting paid. And your wife, she's not getting paid, she's doing it out of love. But she doesn't deserve, thank you, I appreciate your service. And if it is in an eating house or a restaurant that a woman has served you, and she's looking a little bit beautiful, then you don't only give her a token of appreciation, but some other tokens also you give. Don't you give a cash tip also? Now, do you do this for your wife? How many times do we do this? So it shows that there's something else. There's something else in all this. But these sins and these wrongs, they start off in the small, discreet manner. That is why our Buzugana didn't say, it's even more important, many a times, to take care of these minor sins than the major sins. Like in illness, see, it's more important to take care of the minor illness than the major illness. Because the major illness, you yourself will be concerned about, got a heart attack, cancer. So any person that's got this type of illnesses, then he doesn't take it lightly, he doesn't take it casually, he's worried about it. But it's a mild pain, headache or something, you're not so serious about it. I can do with it, man. It's all right, by the evening it'll be settled. So you're not so worried about that mild sickness. But you don't realize that this mild illness can lead to something major. So the right thing was, when it was a mild pain, it was a signal that you're not right. When you're not right, then you take care. Mild toothache you had. So when you had that mild toothache, it was this very small sensation. The right thing is going to take care now, straight away. You didn't worry about it now. That thing grew and grew and grew. And the toothache, your troubles when the whole house is absolutely quiet, everything is calm, everybody is fast asleep, then this thing starts its work. Throbbing pain, turning from one side to the other side, one side to the other side. Bechen, right? So what is the sensible thing? The sensible thing is when it's in the infantry stages, right at the beginning, you take care of that thing and you will prevent a major crisis. So they say that when the illness is small, it's more important to take care of yourself when it's small rather than when it becomes a major issue. See? You will prevent the major thing. So the sin also, it works on the same principle. Many a times, it's more important to take care of these minor problems. You just said thank you to a woman, or you said hi and she said low, right? Whatever, right? Then you put one thing to the other and you feel that there is some attraction. Something happens and the other, one thing and the other. And then you find yourself in a position that you can't resist. And then you do something terrible, you do something evil. But the way it starts off from this point. Okay? So that is why Allah says, تِلْكَ حُدُودُ اللَّهِ فَلَا تَقْرَبُوا. You see these limits, you mustn't go even close to it. The one who grazes his animals right on the borders of a royal territory, then he must cross over. Because he's got his animals. What do the animals know? Right? What do the animals know? He's grazing his animals right on royal territory. Animals don't know limits. Do they know limits? They don't know limits. Just now it's coming in mind, if it is right, then from Allah Pak, right? Why did Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam use the simile of grazing animals on royal territory? Why? One example is coming. He's giving a tashbih, right? Tashbih is giving a simile, a resemblance, right? A resemblance with your temptation. And mushabbabi is the animal that you are grazing, right? So animal against temptation. Animal is being likened to temptation. So the reason that's coming to my mind is like animals don't know limits. Your temptations, they also don't know, they don't know limits. When the temptation has the bit over you, you're blinded for that moment. You ask anybody who went and did something wrong, haram, right? He said, but you knew it was haram. Why did you do it? He said, no, at that moment, I just went blank. This is the common answer that he'll give you, that I just went blank. So the tashbih here is that animal against your temptation. So your temptation, you become blank at that point. At that 11th hour, you become blank and you do things that you were not supposed to be doing, right? Like look at a person. He was doing some of his banking, right, on a pad or something, right? Something was doing his banking, and as he was pressing some button, some advertisement came up on some naked woman, right? Will you find, what percent of people will you find that will switch it off straight away and not look at it? The person that is considered to be a little bit muttaqi, a little bit of righteous, right? He look at it a little bit, say, hey, astaghfirullah, then he put it off. But he will have those moments of pleasure. He will definitely take that sensation, then he will say istighfar. And in the meanwhile, he knows that if I want to switch this thing on, the possibility that for these things to come up is there. And when they're going to come, they're going to leave their mark on my heart. That blackness and that grime of evil and sin is going to be in your heart. Come what may, it's going to be in your heart. Right? When it's going to be in your heart, then it's going to be a hurdle on your way. See, you are looking for righteousness, you're looking to come towards Allah Ta'ala, and you've got all this muck there. So it's going to be a hurdle on your path. See, it's going to be a hurdle on your path. So what type of precaution you need to take? I was just reading an article. It's a Persian saying, says that alam ra rukhna nest, right? When you look in life, right, and you look in the life, in the journey towards the akhirat, then the roads are not closed. The roads and the avenues to Allah Ta'ala are not closed. Though we think to ourselves, hey, it's so difficult, you know, we're living in the 21st century, how do we avoid? So what the poet is saying, Rukhnan is, there isn't a closed road, there isn't an avenue that is closed. The roads to Allah Ta'ala are open. It just requires a little bit of determination, a little bit of resolve on your end. But you found a little bit of a difficulty, you know, it's impossible. How can I practice? How can I do business? How can I do this? So when you began to reason like that how can I do this, then it becomes difficult. But when you reason, no, there is a way, I can't avoid all these things, then Allah will create a situation where you can avoid these things. And when you have dropped your guard, and you said that there isn't a way to exit out of this problem, then it will be such, there won't be an exit to your problem. So what is required of you is to take a little bit of initiative, and Allah will create an exit for you from your problem, whichever the situation may be. But you need to check within yourself that I need to exit from this problem, and how must I exit from the problem? You will think, you will understand, and you will find an exit. One is the taqwa of the highest level. Hazrat Ji Masihullah Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, Allah Ta'ala fill his grave with Noor. So when he would board a plane, then he would not eat that whole duration of the trip. And sometimes that whole traveling, about 12, 13 hours. And you know, the ambience of a plane, right? It's everybody's eating. As they're opening their lunch, the smell and all that, everything is going. So you feel tempted to eat. But the whole duration of the safar, he won't eat. And his reasoning is to be, I feel very, very embarrassed to accept that food from the hands of a woman, a strange woman. I feel very embarrassed. You see. That is why they say that asal in buzurgok se hasil karne ki cheez unka zauk hai, unki ibadat nahi hai. Ibadat to khud bhi kar sakta hai. Ibadat you can do yourself. The actual thing that you're supposed to be acquiring from this buzurgana deen is zauk. Now, zauk, how you translate it, is their way of thinking, how they reason, how do they see things. See, how they see things. What is the shape of their mind? Go and see now. How they reason, how they do things. When Hazrat Ji Rahmatullah had passed away, so I have to say some of my friends, Hazrat Ji Rahmatullah had certain ways. For example, he would sit in a tashahud position or slightly like this position here with your feet on one end. You will never sit him, you never see him sitting cross-legged. Right? He would always be putting on a topi, right? So tomorrow, since Hazrat is gone now, so these are not the more important things for you to emulate. There's the topi and the sitting posture, that is not just the most important thing for you to emulate. But the thing that is to be emulated is his concern and his care against things of doubt. Doubt, anger, etc., ghussa, pasnaya, that is the more important thing for you to emulate. Now, we'll shortcut the whole thing. You know, see, I've been doing hazardous things, so I'm sitting tashahud, I got my topi always. It is to be emulated, but at a second level. The greater level is, see, anything of doubt, see how he acted, how he conducted himself in doubt. And then, in a most frustrating situation, and he won't lose himself. He's never lost himself in a situation. No frustration, no ghussa. Now that is the more important thing, that you leave out doubtful things and ghussa, anger. Now you left those more important things and you just took the sitting posture, just took the topi, the Jalalabad topi you got now, then I'm Hazrat Ji now, finish. Why I got Jalalabad topi? You misread the person, misconstruing it. So the right thing is, unka zauk hasil karna chahiye. What was their frame of mind? How they thought, how they reasoned, how they behaved. So in that entire duration, you won't take a thing. Right? We will practice it, all right? So the level we practice, it's all right. When she's coming to serve and she says, oh, you want something? So we'll just open that table, right? What they call it, the table, right? And you'll ask her to leave it there. Right? All right, I don't say that is as good as what he was doing, but it's better than you taking the tray from her hand directly. She's passing it and you're taking it. Isn't there a degree of embarrassment in that? Imagine if it was your wife and she is serving someone strange in this manner. Would you appreciate that? It was your wife, right? And she was serving strangers directly in that manner. Would you like that? You wouldn't like that. So that woman is someone's wife, someone's daughter. So she also deserves that type of respect. You don't take it directly from her. And then you're taking it directly from her, then you cannot rule it off that you don't have any feelings. Some feelings will be in the mind. Some, see the, like it's a, you know, a live wire and how you get a shock. So there is some life there, see. When she's passing it to you, there is some life. And you will get some sensation. So this Pusugaradin, see their thinking and see their reasoning. The whole duration, suffer, not 12 hours suffer, but you won't touch a thing. You won't touch one single thing. Now that is Zog. That is to acquiring the type of thinking, the type of mannerism, the type of understanding. So what I'm getting at is, sometimes it happens to us that we think it's so difficult, you can't practice it. Now see, he practiced it. He was also in the 21st century, but he practiced it. And an old man could practice it. The young people, why can't they practice it? If an old person, he'll need the food even more. Right? The fuqaha have given permission to the Sheikh Afani, extreme old age, not to fast also. So he requires relaxations more than we required. But then, in spite of his extreme old age, then too he exercised this type of caution, then it's a lesson for us. Okay, by, I'm so old, you trust me for my righteousness, etc. You respect me for my taqwa. Then I am doing this. Then what should be the level of your taqwa? You feel that I don't have these feelings, right? And when you feel that I don't have these feelings, then too I'm not doing this type of things, then what is the type of taqwa, what is the level of taqwa you require to have? That is the lesson he's giving us. Hazrat Mawlana Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, when he was doing his tafsir and all that, so there was a room that was built for him. Right? So in isolation, seclusion, he's doing his work. A lot of, 1,000 kitab, so he needs that mental focus. Right? Mind is everywhere, you can't have that type of focus. So he required that focus. So in that, now sometimes someone has to pass some papers to him, right? Some book or some message. Now he's the head of the whole institute. So there's hundreds of people there. So someone needs to pass a message to him as well. So the easiest thing is to pass the message through a young boy. So Mawlana says, see, well, I am in my seclusion, then don't send any young boy, beardless boy to me. Now, our yakin is Mawlana doesn't have those inclinations. Right? That's our faith in him, that he doesn't have those inclinations. But why did he do this? The only answer that comes to my mind, it was to impress upon people like us, stupid people like us, that we can have these inclinations. So he's telling us, but you trust me for my righteousness, my virtue, and my truth. Right? You trust me. I'm exercising this type of precaution. Then what is the level of precaution you need to exercise? From this type of young boys, beardless boys, how much of precaution you must exercise when I'm exercising this type of precaution. So where there's a will, there's a way. You can't say that, you know, it's 21st century, you can't avoid these things here. I was just thinking some days ago that in the old days when you needed to go for Hajj, right? So it was a long drawn effort, you know, long drawn effort. You have to go on camelback, the difficulty that you go through one place to the other place. Eventually, after a month, 2 months, you are reaching Hajj, right? En route, someone died, someone was sick. And it's a difficult thing, right? That was the old day, right? But all this mujahada and all this difficulty that you underwent, it contributes towards your acceptance, right? Take you 2 months, 3 months just to reach. But all this mujahada is not gone in waste, not gone in vain. It's contributing towards the acceptance of your Hajj. Now it happens that when you started your journey and until you reached your tawaf, maybe it's less than 15 hours, that you're already in your tawaf. From the time you jumped the plane till you are in the Haram Sharif starting of your tawaf, less than 15 hours and you can do it. Doesn't it happen? So now the mind begins to think, but there's no mujahada now. There's no mujahada, there's no effort. You haven't exhausted any effort of yours. Right? Allah Pak is still accepting you. So then where is the mujahada now? Where is the effort now? So to me, it seems like that the mujahada and the effort is in two respects. In two respects is the mujahada. See, Allah Pak relaxes the laws, right? Al-ana khaffafa Allahu ankum wa alima anna feekum dhafa. When Allah Ta'ala sees a weakness, then He relaxes the laws. He saw weaknesses, so He created technology. He saw a weakness in us, right? So He created all this, this what you call technology, computer, and all. He created it. He put it into your mind, that created it. And He gave you the ideas. Right? So who gave you the idea? Allah gave the idea. You developed it afterwards. But He put that idea. Why He put that idea? He put that idea when He noticed, when He sensed that there is a weakness now. And the weakness is coming on a sharp, it's called sharp rise. It's getting weaker and weaker all the time. So without this type of gadgets and all that, you can't facilitate life. So He created all these things for you. Alima anna feekum da'afa. But He still is offering you acceptance. Right? But that acceptance comes with a little bit of sacrifice, a little bit of a struggle. So in that zaman, there was a struggle. The struggle was different. You're traveling by foot, traveling on a camel, traveling on a horse, traveling on a hunky, on a donkey, coming to Hajj. All that effort. So that accumulated effort is going towards your acceptance, right? That whole 3 months, 4 months duration, you're going, all the difficulty, out of home, out of a house, all the difficulty is going towards your acceptance. Now where's the effort? So now the struggle is that you look after your eyes. At the airport, you look after your eyes. You board the plane, you look after your eyes. In your hotel room or in the hotel foyer, etc., you look after your eyes. As you come into the Haram Sharif, there again you look after your eyes. So now the effort is different. So in all these places, you look after your eyes. You will not then become free. You don't say, now I'm on the plane now, I can do what I want. Nobody's watching me. It's free fall. I'm in a holiday spirit now. So I can't be so strict. You want acceptance. You want acceptance, then you must go through that struggle. Those people went through a struggle of a different nature, at a different level. You must also go through a struggle. So this is your struggle, that you look after your eyes at every point, from the airport to the plane, till you come into the hotel, till you come to the Haram Sharif, till you return back home. All the time you look after your eyes. So that's the struggle. Isn't that an effort now? Because everybody is dressed, you know, however they want. Nobody feels that I have to dress within a code. Nobody feels like that. I can dress up how I want. Nobody feels like that. So your whole struggle is to take care of your eyes. Your eyes, your tongue. You're not talking to these people. Right. The second effort that is required in this whole suffer. The second effort that is required is that you make sure that you're taking good care of your time. Right? Your namaz are read on time. One is your eyes, that you are very cautious about women, not intermingling, not talking, not looking at them. Not just not looking, but not even intermingling, not even talking to them. Right? So you have to be very, very careful. We can't become casual then. Even though those women are becoming a little bit casual towards you, that doesn't give you the license to become casual towards them. They are becoming a little bit casual. Oh, Haji Bhai, kem cho Haji Bhai tama, budhara mulaqat ni thi. This Haji Bhai story, Haji Bhai story, leave all that, Bhai. Leave all the stories here because it's dangerous stories. Very dangerous. Creates some fire within the heart, within the mind. Your intentions begins to get perverted or corrupted, confused. So leave all these things. You need to observe that parda. You must observe that parda. If you want acceptance, and this is the way, وَالَّذِينَ جَاهَدُ فِينَا. What is the meaning of mujahada? The meaning of mujahada is a struggle for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. What? It's a struggle for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. So for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, there's a struggle on the eye. The eye is struggling now. You have to come to terms. Don't look. So the struggle is for what? to bring Allah Ta'ala, to bring Allah Ta'ala system into you, you are going through a struggle, right? So when you are going through a struggle to bring Allah Ta'ala system into you, that's called mujahada. And this is the promise. وَالَّذِينَ جَهَدُ. For to bring Allah Ta'ala system, you are going through a struggle. His system is you mustn't be free with women. So you have to restrain yourself. You must restrain yourself, no matter how difficult you are finding it. Otherwise you're making Hajj and Umrah and all that, you don't see that people go for all that. But there's absolutely no change in their lives. No change. As compared to the people in the past, I remember in the 60s I used to see many people going for Hajj. And there's a very clear change in their lives. After they return from Hajj, they're different people. People don't have beards now, they've got beards. When namazis, they become namazis. They don't wear proper Islamic clothing now, they're wearing proper clothing. Right? Men become like that woman. So that Hajj really turned them around. And now, it's not turning them around. Many times they're becoming worse. If they were doing wrongs discreetly, now they're doing it openly. Because they feel, now I'm Haji Sahib now. Everything I can do, because I'm Haji Sahib. I'm something superior. That means you didn't behave yourself. You just thought, no, the money will do it. I got the money and I'll do it. When you don't add the ingredient of taqwa in all these things here, then your ibadat is depreciating. See, the value of ibadat is, like I say, the rand depreciated. So your sawab also is going to be depreciating. Same, exactly the same is going to be depreciating. There are some hadiths that I got in my mind. Someone wants to know, sometime I'll explain that, you know, that how the reward depreciates. So same, your rewards begin to depreciate. Because you don't add that ingredient of taqwa. You added the ingredient of taqwa, now your reward is appreciating. See, that value of your currency is appreciated in proportion to your taqwa. You got the taqwa, is appreciating. Without the taqwa, it's depreciating, or going down, losing value. So you're losing value then. So this is the one thing with women, and the type, the level of taqwa, the level of caution that you need to exercise. And one thought was coming to my mind, right? See, in the Haram Sharif in Makkah, or for whatever reason, the authorities are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. There isn't anything that is cordoning the woman away from the men. You know, like you say, the woman should be separate from the men. Now the tawaf, everybody is getting mixed up. Right? When you're getting mixed up now, you can be sometimes rubbing shoulder with the woman. You are bumping her, she's bumping onto you. Right? There can be feelings, all that. So if South Africans could start off this sunnah at least, you know, to divide the men from the women, how they can do it, all right, we all will go on to the inner line, because the men will be more thick right inside. And on the outer line, there may be more women, right? But right inside, there may be more men. So we will insist on our crowds that the men will go right inside, whilst the women will go on the outer line. And we do it ourselves, we encourage others. Because the authorities are not doing it. For whatever reason they're not doing it, Allah Pak knows. But if we can start it off, who knows, if we have good intentions, make dua, speak to people, we start off the sunnah. The woman must be separated from men. And they must be separated, that this is the dividing line, that you go on this end, whilst the men will go on that end. So one person starts it off, he talks about it, the second person sees the merit in it, he wants to do it, the third person, it carries on, so forth and so on. But isn't it a great thing? Man ahya sunnati, you liven a sunnah. And it's like 100 shaheeds. Don't you know the sawab? And then if you aliven a sunnat in the precincts of the Haram Sharif then, in the Haram Sharif, 100,000 sawab. But if we started off, you know, this thing here is going out of line. In the Madina Sharif, they took the initiative, they got it under control. Haven't they got it under control? Women is separate, men is separate. So they took the initiative, they got some control. Here, it was relaxed, nobody is taking the initiative, so it's just carrying on. People coming with all type of dressing and all, bumping with men and all that. It's not the right thing. Yeah. So we, Allah give us that tawfiq at least, you know. We let us start it off. That we will observe the parda. We will not be free with women. We will show a dividing line between men and women. Right? Yeah. And the reward is so immense. Right in the haram and you're starting off something. You're educating your people. making them understand the reward and the virtue of it, the importance of it. So people are taking on, they're taking on. And they see that these people are doing it, let's be to it. There seems to be some good in this. Everybody is doing it. So that there's a clear line between the men and the women. Women are separate and men are separate. So this is the one struggle that we need to look at when we're going for Umrah Hajj. And since after Ramadan, then you're preparing for Hajj. The month of Hajj starts immediately after Ramadan, months of Hajj. So from now, even mentally, we're supposed to be preparing ourselves, mentally preparing those that are interested, those that are intending, mentally, more than the finance and all whatever else, right? Mentally must train ourselves, are we going for this? That is the one thing. Second, I say, is namaz. You're traveling, then your namaz doesn't become maaf. Now, where's the sense in this? You're going to do one nafal, umrah, and we're leaving out the faraz namaz. Where's the brains? Is that the right thing? It's not the right thing at all. It doesn't make sense. You're going for a nafil thing, and we're leaving out the faraz. So, see that we read our namazes on time. Namazes on time. And we need to understand that we don't need to follow everybody and anybody. Someone is saying, oh, you can join up two namazes, you can do this, you can do this. But you got one tartib, one sequence, you've been trained, you understood, you learned from someone. Just carry on like this. Right? Because you'll find there that everybody is doing his own thing. Now you're sitting in the serf there, and then one woman will come and stand next to you. Now she's also joining the serf up. Now there's a lot of people that are coming in that are ignorant, they don't know. They may be Arab looking, but it doesn't mean that people that are Arabic speaking and looking, then they know everything. I remember that Palestinian Jamaat was around. So they say many of the Palestinians, most of them can't even read Arabic properly. Quran, they can't read properly. Though they can speak Arabic and read Arabic, but proper Arabic with tajweed to recite the Quran, they can't do it. So it doesn't mean that the Arabs, they know more. It's not a license that you should go and emulate them. Many of them, most of them don't have beards. Look at the Egyptians, no beards. So is it a thing to be emulating them? So it's not because they speak a language that you emulate them. So if they're not wearing topi now, because he's Arab and he's not wearing a topi, so I mustn't wear a topi. But the reasoning is all cockeyed. Right? In the meanwhile, you don't disgrace them, you don't despise them, you don't humiliate them. Perhaps they didn't have the opportunity of going to a maktab, getting to a training, whatever it is. Because of this, they are backwards in certain things. Allah give them guidance. Don't look down upon them, don't despise and speak out against them. But by the same token, the other extreme is then you see, oh, he's an Arab, so I must just follow him. Not wearing a topi, wearing this type of clothing, so I must do it. Performing namaz like this, I must do it. Allah doesn't want you, la taqfu ma laysa laka bi ilm, that you pursue and you go behind something that you have no proper knowledge. You just saw him and you don't have the proper knowledge, and you're just following the person. Now that's called blind following. You just saw that person, Allah doesn't want you. Because he says, you're going to be accountable for this. Allah Baghdad were to call you on the day of Qiyamah and asks you, that why did you do this? No, that Arab was doing it. But did you do it on the base of knowledge or guesswork? He'll ask you, on the base of knowledge or guesswork? Like I said, most of them don't have beards. So are you going to shave off your beard as well? So you follow on the basis of knowledge. So this is the second thing that you have to be very, very articulate, very, very particular about. One is this parda, the whole duration. We start training ourselves from now. We speak to people individually, you know, when we're meeting up with friends, or we talk to them about it. And the second thing that we become very careful about is our namaz, on time, properly, correctly. Whether it's at the airport, whether it's after we boarded the plane, whether we are in the hotel, at whichever time, but we need to see that we're getting our namaz on time. And then obviously, getting the namaz on time is going to be a little bit different from home, right? At home is different, right? Just about 20 minutes before the namaz, and you jump into your car, you come to the masjid in good time. Now you want to be in good time in the masjid, you have to be planning and preparing long in advance, sometimes 1 hour in advance, so that you see that you get a good place in the masjid. So prepare yourself, you're going for that cause, so mentally get yourself prepared. That I'm going for a certain thing, and I need to prepare for that. It must be long in advance. So that's the second thing. as far as the namaz is concerned, then we need to educate a woman as well. The hadith says it very clearly. Nabi Sallam was in Medina, right? And he used to be leading the namaz. He was in Medina. He was the imam in Masjid al-Nabawi. He was leading the namaz. But he very clearly, he explained to the woman that your namaz in your homes is more rewarding than your namaz behind me. So it's a Masjid al-Nabawi, with Nabi Sallam being the imam, the sahaba being the muqtadis, then to your reward in your home is more rewarding than your namaz behind me. So please tell all the women that you read your namaz at home. Especially in the crowd, sometimes you mix it up with a man, man is mixing up with you, you know, everything's going off. So the safe thing to see that your namaz is valid, the women go and read the namaz in their homes. They don't come and make tawaf at around the time of namaz. The time that is convenient to them, like after Isha, but there's no namaz coming in between. You can do your tawaf then. Sit there as long as you want. But namaz times, you're not around. Right? So these are the 2-3 things that is coming to my mind. Since people are preparing for Hajj, etc., then they must be conscious about these aspects. One is the parda, etc. One is the namaz. One is the woman's namaz. Right? Their namaz should be in their homes. The fourth thing they need to be very careful about is sometimes you have it that here they don't go for shopping so easily. Everybody says, I need to go shopping. So train them that no, you will do the shopping for them. In the old days, this is what used to happen. Ask your great granny and all that what they were doing. They were going for shopping, running around everywhere. They weren't doing these things here. So whatever they need, you prepare the list and do that. This world, they are not farishtas. They are men. Men have feelings, whether it is a shopkeeper, whether it is whoever, but you have feelings, they have feelings. So it's safer for the woman to be at home than going out and parading these bazaars and shops, etc. You do the shopping. When Nabi Sallam was speaking about the bazaars being the worst place, right? Then he was speaking about it in Medina Munawwara. Now, suddenly, you know, in Medina Munawwara, everything becomes, all our brothers, Haji Bais and Haji Bens, you can go for shopping and do everything. You stay at home. Your time must be in the Haram Sharif. Don't go and parading on this type of, you're going for a certain purpose. See that that is accomplished. Accomplished and accomplished well. Allah give tawfiq. Abu Yusuf is going to give a little bit of illustration of Hajj and Umrah. Listen carefully. Anything anybody's intending, then.
As many of us may know that basically there are 3 types of Hajj. One is the Qiran Hajj, one is the Tamattu' Hajj, and one is the Ifrad Hajj. But the most common amongst our South Africans is the Tamattu' type of Hajj. So we'll explain that. And whilst explaining that, the procedure of Umrah will also fall in. So even those that are just going for Umrah also, this would also be covered. So basically, when a person is going to be performing Tamattu' Hajj, then he would first, before entering the miqat, so if a person is going directly to Makkah Mukarrama, or if a person is going first to Medina Sharif and then to Makkah Mukarrama, then whichever way, but before entering the miqat, the boundaries, one would have to first put on the ihram. And the ihram is basically what we all know, the 2 pieces of cloth, the upper cloth and the lower cloth. And it shouldn't be any sewn garment, but just plain fabric. And then once a person puts it on, then you would then perform 2 rakats of salah for the ihram. And once the salah is over, you would then take off your topi, which you were wearing before, and then you would recite the talbiyah and make your niyat of ihram. And now once a person recites the talbiyah and he makes that niyat, now he is already in the state of ihram. and all the things that are prohibited whilst a person is in a state of ihram, like applying itar, removing any hair, clipping nails, etc., all of that will now be prohibited and impermissible. And if a person does any of these prohibited actions, then according to the different cases would be the different types of penalties that a person would have to discharge. Then once a person enters the state of ihram at the miqat or prior to the miqat, then now he would be proceeding straight to Makkah Mukarrama. And when he, now obviously as I said, that explaining the tamattu hajj, so in tamattu a person would be performing the umrah during the months of hajj. So the months of hajj are Shawwal, Zulqa'da and Zulhijjah. So in any of these months a person would perform the umrah. So when a person comes to Makkah Mukarrama with the ihram of umrah, he would then perform the umrah as normal, that way he would first come and perform the tawaf. And when a person is performing the tawaf of umrah with his ihram, then he would have to do istiba' and ramal. So istiba' basically is that way a person ties the ihram, the upper garment, in such a way that way his right shoulder is exposed, that he tucks the garment under his right arm so that the right shoulder is exposed. And this would be for the entire duration of the tawaf, that when a person is going to be making the tawaf, he would be doing it with that istiba, that way the right shoulder would be kept exposed. And also he would practice ramal, ramal in the tawaf, but this is just for the first three rounds of the seven rounds of the tawaf. And ramal basically is where a person would take short steps, walking briskly, having his chest slightly out, and he would perform ramal in the first three rounds. Once he completes the third round, then now he would walk normally and as usual. Then when a person is going to be commencing the tawaf, then how would a person commence the tawaf? So a person would make the niyat of tawaf when he is standing directly in front of the Hajr-e Aswad. That when he comes directly in front of the Hajr-e Aswad, he would face it. Obviously the asal, the original is to make istilam by kissing the Hajr-e Aswad. But nowadays with the crowds, it is highly impossible. So istilam would be made just by gesture and just by a person making a sign. So how a person would do it is that when commencing, you would first raise your hands as you would raise it in namaz. That you would raise your hands and recite the takbir, Allahu Akbar. And then you would, by sign, put your hands out as if you are touching the Hajr-e Aswad. And then you would draw your hands back and kiss them. That way you would recite, Bismillahi Allahu Akbar wa lillahi alhamd. And then you would turn your body, allowing your left shoulder to be facing the Kaaba Sharif, and your right shoulder would be away. So basically you would be moving in an anti-clockwise motion around the Kaaba. So once you turn, now a person would start off the tawaf of the Kaaba Sharif, and a person would make one entire round, and when he comes to the end of the first round, then he would make istilam again. And istilam would be made again in the same way, that way you would face your hands towards the Hajr-e Aswad and draw it back and kiss it, and then continue with the second round. And in this way you would complete seven rounds of the Kaaba Sharif, and in total this would amount to one entire tawaf. And upon the completion of the seventh round, you would then make istilam for the eighth time. And once the istilam has been done, you would then go preferably to a place, a spot behind the Maqam Ibrahim in the Haram, or if it's not possible, then any other place, and you would recite, perform two rakats of tawaf salah. And once you are done with that, then it is preferable that a person drinks some zamzam, and then he goes and makes dua at the multazam. But all this is according to, based on if it being possible without causing any taklif to any person. If a person knows that now in the thick of the crowd, it would be difficult for him, unless he would be causing inconvenience to others, then it would be necessary that a person refrains from going at that time, because a person would, instead of fulfilling a mustahab, he would be causing taklif, which is impermissible to others. And once a person is now ready to go to perform the sa'i of Safa and Marwa, then it is mustahab that you make istilam for the ninth time before proceeding to Safa and Marwa. You would make istilam and then proceed. And when a person comes to the Mount Safa, so that is where the Sa'i would commence. That you would commence the Sa'i between Safa and Marwa from Safa, and then you would move to Marwa. So in total you would do 7 rounds. So each round would be counted. From Safa to Marwa is 1, and then Marwa to Safa back is the 2nd round. So you would commence the Sa'i from Safa, and the 7th round would end at Marwa. So in this way you would make 7 rounds. And for males, whilst walking between Safa and Marwa, when they walk, when they come to the Milayne Akhbarin, so the green lights, or now the overhead lights as they have nowadays, so a person would then start jogging in this area. And once he reaches the other end, then he would stop jogging and he would walk as normal until he reaches Marwa. And then when a person reaches Marwa, that is that first round, and then you would return back for the 2nd round. And then in this entire duration and period of time, whether during Tawaf or whether during the Safa Marwa, the most advisable things that a person engages in dua and in adhkar. Though it is permissible that a person recites tilawat, but the best is that a person engages in dua and a person engages in azkar. And once a person is over with the Safa Marwa, now the last thing is that for a person to come out of the state of ihram. So the person, for a male to come out of the state of ihram, a person would either shave his head or trim his head, the hair of his head, in equal length throughout entirely. But the most virtuous would be that way a person shaves off all the hair completely from his head. And once this is done, now a person is out of the state of ihram and he would wear normal clothing. So this is also the procedure of a normal umrah, even if a person is not going for hajj. And if a person is going to be performing tamattu hajj, then this umrah would be performed initially during the months of hajj. And now a person would stay in the precincts of the haram in Makkah Mukarrama right till the days of hajj after having performed his umrah. And then when the days of hajj do come, then on the 8th of Dhul Hijjah, one would then put on the ihram with the niyat of hajj. So the ihram would be put on in the haram area, and a person would then proceed on the 8th to Mina. And after fajr, after performing his fajr, after sunrise, the person would then proceed to Mina on the 8th of Dhul Hijjah. And you would stay in Mina for one entire day, meaning performing 5 salahs from Zuhr to Isha of the 8th, as well as the Fajr of the 9th. So for that entire duration of time, you would stay in Mina. Then a person, after sunrise on the 9th, you would proceed from Mina to Arafat for the wukuf. And the wukuf is the farz of Hajj. If a person misses out the wukuf in Arafat, then his Hajj is incomplete, his Hajj is not done. So this is the first farz of Hajj that a person needs to fulfill. And the wukuf will be done from the time of Zuhr till sunset. So a person would remain in Arafat from Zuhr, or from whatever time he reaches Arafat, right till the time of sunset. Once sunset takes place, now the Hujjaj would then move to Muzdalifah. But they would not perform Maghrib Salah in Arafat, but rather they would move immediately after sunset towards Muzdalifah. And only upon reaching Muzdalifah would they combine both the Maghrib and Isha Salah together and perform both at one time in Muzdalifah. Then upon reaching Muzdalifah, you would spend the entire night in Muzdalifah and until Fajr of the next day. So that is now the next day would be the 10th. So after Fajr, now a person at the time of sunrise would then proceed towards Mina. And when a person comes to Mina, so on the 10th, the 4 a'mal would have to be carried out. That way a person would first make rami, that is pelting the main jamara, just the one jamara, what they normally refer to as the big shaitan. And then you would perform the zabah, that is slaughtering the dumb animal. Those who are performing the qiran hajj, or those that are performing the tamattu hajj, for them to slaughter the dumb animal is wajib. So that would come second after the rami. And once the slaughtering of the animal has taken place, now a person would shave off his head and come out of the state of ihram. And lastly, The second farz of Hajj will then have to be performed, and that is the tawaf al-ziyara. And once, so a person would carry out these four in this sequence. The first three, it is wajib to follow that sequence. That first the rami has to be done, then only can a person slaughter the animal, and only after the animal has been slaughtered, then only can a person shave off his head. If the sequence is changed or altered in any way for these three, then a penalty would have to be discharged. And after performing the tawaf al-ziyara, meaning after having shaved one's head, one would then go to Makkah Mukarrama to perform the tawaf al-ziyara, which would then be followed by sa'i as well. That if after performing the tawaf, one would then perform sa'i between Safa and Marwa, and then you would return to Mina. And when a person would return to Mina, so this will now be the next day will now be the 11th and the 12th. So a person, while staying in Mina on the 11th and the 12th, now you would have to pelt the three jamara. On the 10th, you had only pelted one, the jamaratul aqaba, the main jamara. But on the 11th and the 12th, all three would have to be pelted, seven pebbles to be pelted on each one. So on each day, 21 pebbles would have to be pelted on the 11th as well as on the 12th, and the pelting would have to take place after Zawal. The person cannot pelt before Zawal, but only after Zawal. And this fifth day of Hajj would terminate by the time of sunset. Those who do not intend to stay for the optional day, that is the 13th, then they should leave Mina at the time before sunset. And if a person intends staying in Mina for the optional day, the 13th, then he would remain in Mina and pelt on the 13th as well, all three jamara, all three shaitans. And after having pelted, this also would take place after Zawal. Then a person would come back to Makkah Mukarrama and return back home. And before returning, then the other wajib of Hajj would be that a person performs the tawaful wida, the final tawaf, and then would a person return back home. There's pamphlets that have been passed out with some common errors of Hajj. That, as I had explained, that certain things are prohibited in Ihram, that a person applying itar, a person clipping nails, etc. So this folder has been prepared with the detailed outlining the prohibited things in the state of Ihram and different situations that might arise. So we be able to just study it, and if there are any questions, then you can ask the questions later on, inshallah.